This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. It's Worldwide Wave Time, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. I am lucky enough, my name is Matt, and I'm lucky enough to be joined tonight by Stefan.
Good evening.
And a special guest presenter, Shannon. Welcome, Shannon.
Hello. Good to be here.
Excellent.
So from the day we're born, we strive to forge our own identity, the parts of our life that make us both fit in and stand out. But the process is a whole lot more complicated if you're from mixed cultures. And it's even more confusing and confronting when sexuality plays a part.
Elias Dashan is Lebanese, Palestinian and gay. In a culture where coming out is a foreign concept, he has shared his journey of in coming out in a new book titled Arab, Australian, Others, Stories on Race and Identity. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
A lot of people who come from mixed backgrounds, mixed cultural backgrounds, the whole concept of coming out, I think they need to realise that it's a very Western concept. You go to the Middle East, this whole idea of coming out isn't really a thing amongst LGBTI people. Some of them don't ever come out, and that's because while sexuality is not an important concept at all, the whole idea of coming out, making yourself public, making announcements and stuff like that in many ways is a very Western concept.
Tonight we are in Palestine, and Palestine has been a battleground for national identity for centuries. So how much room is there for you to find your own personal identity? And if you add multiple cultures and sexuality to the mix, does it all just become too hard? Well, for many, yes. But Elias Jarshan was up for the challenge. He wrote his story, Coming Out Palestinian, as a part of a new book titled Arab, Australian, Other, Stories on Race and Identity. We started by asking Elias what it was like growing up in Australia with both a Lebanese and Palestinian background.
I mean, I guess, you know, I did feel like growing up that I was otherwise in some way, because, you know, I was obviously a minority in the country, even though it's, you know, even though Sydney, where I grew up in Western Sydney, is a very multicultural part of Australia, and the suburb that I was in, Parramatta area, is very multicultural, especially with Lebanese people. So even though there was some familiarity in my surround, it still felt like we were a minority. We still felt like we had different cultural traditions, different, obviously different language. So we did feel like we were the other in some way, but at the same time we didn't, because my parents, they both immigrated to Australia in the mid to late 60s. So they had been around in the country for a while before I was born in the mid 80s. And so that, I guess, by the time I went to high school and stuff, that my whole family was fairly integrated. Like my brothers and sisters, we were all born in Australia. We all spoke English as our first language. We spoke Arabic with our parents, but we had no trouble getting by. But sometimes, you know, there were every now and then culture shocks with when we get hang out with our friends who weren't Arab and what have you. But at the same time, a lot of our friends come from non-English speaking backgrounds themselves. So there was that familiarity being part of the minority.
And in the book you mentioned that you kind of concealed a little bit being Palestinian, and to start with you were more Lebanese. You describe yourself as Lebanese rather than Palestinian.
There was a long time when I sort of just avoided telling people I was Palestinian, because I was just constantly having to explain myself and constantly having to not just explain where Palestine was and who Palestinian people are, but obviously have to explain myself and have to sort of somehow set the record straight with these people that I'm not a terrorist, that I'm not someone, I'm not anti-Semitic, that I'm not this. Or I just had to sort of somehow constantly dispel all these stereotypes that people immediately associate with Palestinians. And it was almost like a double-edged sword. Like for a while, for a long time, I was doing that. But there was a time when I was a very hesitant in telling people that I had Lebanese background as well, because just in the lead up to 9/11, there was a lot of gangs getting headlines in tabloids in Sydney, notably the Daily Telegraph. And these gangs all happened to be from Lebanese background, and they were doing drive-by shootings in some suburbs, especially Maryland, which is not far from where I live in Parramatta. So there was all these like negative stereotypes that came with being an Arab. And these stereotypes go back to the 80s and stuff. It was nothing new, but it just seemed to crystallize specifically at the turn of the century when I was about 14, 15, 16 years old. But having said that, like the shame I felt in Palestinian was a lot stronger than the shame I felt in being Lebanese. And it took a while to shake that off. It took a while for me to just start telling people first off the bat that I was Palestinian before I was telling people that I was Lebanese. The Lebanese community, they're already highly visible as they are, especially in Sydney. And I just felt like, you know, it was important to stamp my Palestinian identity before the Lebanese side, because I felt like the Palestinians needed that visibility.
Were there any events that made you want to express your Palestinian, you know, being Palestinian? Was there anything that led up to that, or it was just a journey that you went through? And
I don't know what specifically made me want to come out as Palestinian. They're all bits and pieces. Like in the chapter, I talk about how when I was working at McDonald's in the back area of the kitchen, how there was a manager who just sort of like, you know, just sort of said, oh, you throw rocks and stuff, you like throwing rocks. It just instantly associated me with the stereotype of what Palestinians do. And he just said it in a really jokey way, like he had no idea about the context and the history and stuff. And I was really young and naive. And so that was one moment that I'll never forget. And there were some other moments as well that I talk about in the book. But I mean, there were other stuff as well. Like when I was at university, there were some moments when I was in some classes and people would be talking about the Israel-Palestine situation. And I just felt like, you know, some of the conversations they were having in class and in the political subjects that we had to do, they were all very Western-centric and they just constantly centered themselves in the debates of what they were talking about when it comes to the Middle East in general. And I think in universities when I felt more comfortable just coming into myself as a Palestinian, leaning into that identity and using that as a tool to explain some things in general to people, make people realize that, you know, just because you live in the West shouldn't mean you have to center everything around you. There's more to the world out there than being parochial in everything you do and everything you see. I think it came full circle when I went to the Middle East for a holiday, well, a few years ago now, that when I just saw everything with my own eyes and I just imagined where my dad was and all the stories, my dad, my aunt, my uncles and everyone, what they all told me while I was growing up, it all kind of like came to life just seeing the situation, seeing it with my own eyes. And it was confronting. And in a way, I was kind of glad that I went when I went, because it just changed me as a person. I came back a different person. And I didn't make a conscious decision of get one. It's not like I went on the plane and made a conscious decision and said, okay, I'm going to start telling people in Palestine every time.
That was Elton Prabh, Palestinian Lebanese gay man Elias Darshan, with us on Joy 949.
I found that concept, I hadn't really thought about it until you verbalised, but that concept of coming out as something other than, I guess, being a part of the LGBTI community, coming out, just, you know, we all talk about coming out to do with your sexuality. And but really, it can be applied to anything.
It can. I mean, obviously, as a Palestinian, he was faced with quite a lot of racism and that's...
And misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding and people...
Stereotypes.
I think, I guess, and that's made him... Yeah, the journey made him want to come out as Palestinian.
It's that added... I mean, we certainly had guests on the show before who've talked about the double coming out, if they've had to come out as gay and then come out as, say, HIV positive or something. This is kind of just adding another layer to that. And
But it's true. We don't think about the cultural aspect of coming out as well. In this sense, so you're coming out as a different culture
you just sort of almost take your culture for granted.
Yeah, it's not really something that I've considered that would be like neat that you would think about doing so much.
I mean, you can come out as anything, really.
You could.
So, yeah. What would you like to come out about tonight? You can come out as you love line dancing.
Love stamps.
Maybe
all of them. Maybe you are a line dancing stamp collector.
Pauline Hanson's voter.
Yeah. It is your chance to come out in whatever way you want to tonight. It's World Wide Wave. Coming up, Elias talks about how coming out as Palestinian helped him come out as gay. It's World Wide Wave.
joy.org.au, where our diverse communities can come together across the nation, across the globe. Joy.
I am Bisi Alimi from Nigeria. For those who say homosexuality is a Western import to Africa, I am a proof that you can be proudly African and gay and fabulous. And I'm on World Wide Wave.
Tonight, we're talking all about the culture and
changes. And discovering and yourself.
Absolutely.
And coming out. And I've got something to reveal.
Do you? Do we need drum rolls?
I am an 80s tragic. I loved 80s music. I loved that song. Anything 80s, I will go for.
Yeah,
drives my friends insane, actually.
I might be in the same category, actually. But
and I'm proud of it now. I should get a T-shirt.
There was a time I missed. It's definitely the 80s. Should have been born to be raised in the 80s.
Oh, we've got three 80s tragics in the room. Yes, you two can come out to us tonight, as 317 has just done. Coming out as two things, a humanist. I actually like that one, 317. We love having humanists in our great audio audience. You've come out as a news junkie too. A news junkie. I wonder if you just sit on you know, Google News and, you know, keep hitting refresh or...
Don't you do that?
Things.
Tonight, our guest Elias Jashan has penned his journey to defining his own personal identity as a gay Lebanese Palestinian. Elias tells us how coming out as Palestinian led to questioning who he was and ultimately his sexuality.
When I figured out who I was from the cultural side of things, it made things a lot easier for me to figure out who I was from the sexuality side of things, because you know, it all goes back to that intersectional identity that I have. I'm gay, I'm deaf, I'm an Arab, and I'm Australian, what have you. And I guess the whole Arabness side of me it took up a lot of my headspace, because I was constantly bombarded with images of, you know, what Arab were portrayed and have all these negative stereotypes and how people perceive me and how I constantly have to explain myself. And the Arab side of me was something I just could never hide. It was in my name, it was in my Western Sydney accent, or, you know, it was in the way my parents talk, it was in the way I speak Arabic at home. It was something I could never hide. So until I figured that out, until I came to terms with that, I had a massive weight lifted off my shoulder. And the more that load, that weight lightened, I guess, it sort of made my headspace became more, I guess, dominated with the sexuality side of things. And that was something I was able to hide, because it wasn't something people knew straight off the bat. It wasn't something that people could tell straight away by my name. It wasn't something that people could tell by the way I speak, whatever, that I was gay. That was something I was battling inside myself for a while. In some ways, the fact that I came to terms with my Palestinianness and my Arabness in general, the fact that I came to terms with that was a blessing in disguise, because it made it easier for me to come to terms with my sexuality, because I didn't have to deal with two things at once for so long. I just dealt with one thing, came to terms with one thing, became really proud of that. And I realized, you know, if I could be proud of that, then why can't I be proud of being gay as well? They're not mutually exclusive. They all cross over, and they're always going to cross over at some point. And that's a great thing. I mean, that in some ways, that's like a superpower for me.
What when you came out as a gay man, what were the reactions from your family?
It wasn't all, you know, roses and sunshine from the word get-go. It's taken a long time. that at the start, my mum didn't want to acknowledge the fact that I was gay. She didn't want to meet my then, now, my ex-boyfriend. My brother for a while. My brother and I have always been on talking terms. Same with my mum. My mother and I have always been on talking terms. There was never a time when my parents, my family rejected me. There was never a time they outcast me or anything. I'm very, very lucky with that. But when it came to bringing someone home, when it came to talking about who I was dating and stuff, for a while they were just swept under the carpet. It was like treated like the white elephant in the room, or, you know, or any other cliche you can think of where they didn't want to confront it, they didn't want to talk about it. But now, you know, I've been living in London for almost 4 years, and for the past two visits to Sydney, I brought my husband with me. And my mum met my husband when she first came to London to visit me 3 years ago. But, you know, when Aaron came out with me to Sydney last year, he met my whole extended family, and it all went really well. And even my brother, he was just talking to Aaron, and they got along really well. And it just finally came full circle, and I was really, really happy about that. My sisters were really supportive from the first day. They've been really great. And in some ways, that may have helped smooth things over with my mum and my brother.
What is it like for LGBTIQ people in Palestine at the moment?
Look, I can't really speak on their behalf because I've only been there once for a visit. But I do know from a cultural perspective, not just in Palestine itself, but in the diaspora as well. And this goes with many other Arab cultures. It's just such a cultural taboo to be gay, or lesbian, or bi, or even trans. It's just a massive cultural taboo. It's also a culture that's unfortunately riddled with toxic patriarchy, where everything goes back to the father, everything goes back to the parents as well, but mostly the father. And with boys, they're expected to have children and have sons so the son can carry on the family name and all that type of mentality. So, I mean, it's a massive cultural taboo, whether you're Muslim or Christian, or, you know, doesn't matter how religious or non-religious you are, it's the cultural taboo. People will often fall back on the religion as an excuse, but I think that's utter bullshit, because I think, you know, Christian Palestinians are just as equally as homophobic as Muslim Palestinians. Mm. And to use religion, it's just hiding behind the reality of them just being homophobic, full stop. But you know what? I mean, it's no secret that in the Gaza Strip, it's completely illegal to be gay. But in the West Bank, from last I heard, it was one of two places across the Middle East where there's nothing in the legal statute that criminalizes being gay. So you can be gay or lesbian in the West Bank, and so the cops can't really do anything about it if you are. It's not like they can arrest you like they do next door in Egypt, or worst case scenario, what they do just south in Saudi Arabia, where they kill you for being gay. But at the same time, just because there's nothing criminalizing homosexuality doesn't mean the police or the government would stand up for you or enforce your human rights. There's still rampant state-sanctioned discrimination. And it kind of grinds my ears when people talk about, oh, Tel Aviv being the gay capital of the Middle East, and it's a safe haven for gay people in the Middle East. And while that is true to an extent, that's only Tel Aviv, and it's a bubble, just like any other city, major West city around the world, really.
Elias Jashan, who wrote his story Coming Out Palestinian on Joy 94.9.
So much to dissect there, and we will we'll get through lots of points, and there's a few messages coming in as well. That whole issue, though, of being the man of the family and that added pressure in particular cultures, many cultures around the world, of carrying on the family name.
Mm.
Especially if you are... I know we've certainly had guests from China before who've spoken about that feeling that they were letting down their parents because they weren't going to have a child to carry on the family name. Yeah. It's quite...
I think in Tunisia, I think, as well, if I remember rightly, there was this similar theme on that. Yeah, it's interesting.
And if you are the only child, there's kind of no way... I mean, he's got a brother. I guess that's a bit of a... Maybe that's a relief point. If you've got another brother who can fulfill that goal, then maybe that's a bit less pressure,
still, yeah, it is a lot of pressure.
Very interesting stuff. We want to come back to and talk more about religion versus culture there as well. Our guest tonight, Elias Jarshin, we're talking all things Palestine. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Our diverse communities have one home. Joy.
Hello, I'm Stuart Martin. I'm a board member for the Defence LGBTI Information Service. Marching with Pride on Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. Tonight we've stopped off in Palestine. Messages coming in. 317, back again. Since you're an 80s tragic, please play more Prince music. We'll put that on the to-do list, Stefan.
Yes, we are.
We might have a Prince feature.
We need to have a theme. We need to Prince to fit the theme.
Oh, I think Prince would fit just about anything
okay.
you like.
Fair enough.
Akshay says, I'd like to come out as a joy lover. Well, we love that lovely. As well. We did get a question in earlier from 317. Is there still baggage from the Cronulla riots? And what role does the media have in creating stereotypes and hysteria for some groups?
Well, I mean, it is quite a loaded question. I mean, I mean, we are part of the media, but we'll volunteer. I mean,
we're the good media.
We're the good media. There is a lot of play, and there's a lot of creation of moral panics in the media, and it's really actually fascinating to read about the moral panics and how it started in the 80s and all go through that. And you have to create a story. You have to sell. It's ultimately selling something. So. By
even
opposing
now
point
with
of view and by
intense focus on Asian cultures and Chinese people in particular.
The
virus, harking back to the AIDS days, the virus does not discriminate.
Well, I don't think it can.
No. The virus is in Italy.
That's true.
Yeah. It's fascinating listening to talkback radio on the virus and people, the opinion of people on Chinese people, which is quite sad and quite sad to hear, really. But yeah, so the role of the media, I mean, it's.
And I think the Cronulla riots too was also a bit of a turning point in. So it was a battle. It was, but it also caused, I think, at the time, some people who may have sort of had quite strong opinions to go, oh, actually, that's probably, I'd never thought of it that way. And, you know, I'm not that extreme, you know, that sort of thing. So maybe there's some.
Raised awareness and it kind of made people think differently.
Some good people. And some bad, perhaps.
Politics has been a minefield in the Middle East. We asked Elias Jarshin if he thinks the political system imposed upon Palestine by the international community has had an impact on the LGBTIQ community.
I mean, what's happening in Palestine at its core is a result of, it's like a remnant, it's a hangover of colonialism. It goes back to the World War One. It goes back before that to the Ottoman Empire. So in many ways, what's happening in the Middle East is a result of the international community being very Western-centric and very Orientalist in their views of how Middle Easterns should behave, how they should react and what have you. And I think it just doesn't happen, not just on LGBTI Palestinians. I think it has an effect on all Palestinians.
And just then to finish off, what would you tell your young self now that you've lived through coming out as a Palestinian, coming out as a gay man, you've explored the world, what would you tell somebody struggling in the mixed cultural background?
I would tell them, you know, just to do it on their own terms. Gay men or, you know, LGBTI people in general were under so much pressure. I felt like in my, growing up as a teenager and in my 20s, I felt like there was a lot of pressure and there was a lot of expectation to come out and to tell people who you are and stuff like that and to reveal that you're gay and be public about it and, you know, get shouted from the rooftops and what have you. If I were to go back, I wish someone was there to tell me to come out on my own terms. Mm. I mean, I did come out on my own terms. But there are some things in my coming out journey, some parts of my coming out journey that I wish I could have done better. And I feel like my coming out journey would have been a lot better if I had more life experience, if I wasn't so naive, and if I was more in tune, more aware of my intersectionality, because I didn't really understand the concept of my intersectional identity until my mid to late 20s, when I had that epiphany, I guess. But in my early 20s, in my teenagehood, I didn't really understand the concept. I was in this inner turmoil in my brain and stuff. So I guess for people who are going through that, I think I strongly would recommend that they come out on their own terms. And it's never easy. I don't ever want people to think that it's easy once you come out, because in some ways, once you come out, it can be harder. But I think the people who are struggling at the moment, one, first and most important, they need to make sure they do it on their own terms, and two, make sure they have a safety net of sorts, whether it be they can financially support themselves, or whether they have a safety net of friends, a chosen family who can support them when they do come out to family, because that's really important. And I was lucky to have a safety net of friends and chosen family to help me when I came out, because I was still at uni when I came out to my family. I didn't wait till I graduated. I didn't wait till I was working full time and financially able to support myself. And I guess that's one thing that I wish I could have done. I wish if I could go back in time, I probably would have waited until I finished uni and I was working full time before I came out. And I feel like the reason why I did come out when I did, because I felt like there was a lot of pressure to come out. But I mean, that's not the only reason. There are other factors involved as well. A lot of people who come from mixed backgrounds, mixed cultural backgrounds, the whole concept of coming out, I think they need to realize that it's a very Western concept. You go to the Middle East, this whole idea of coming out isn't really a thing amongst LGBTI people. Some of them don't ever come out. And that's because while sexuality is not an important concept at all, the whole idea of coming out, making yourself public, making announcements and stuff like that, in many ways is a very Western concept. And I don't want people from mixed backgrounds to feel like they have to play into that, to feel like that they have to meet the needs of wider mainstream culture, Western Australian culture, to feel like they have to fit into Australia, because it doesn't matter where they are on their journey. They're going to be Australian at the end of the day. They're going to be who they are at the end of the day. And as long as they are happy with who they are at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Elias Jashin, author of Coming Out as Palestinian in Arab, Australian and Others. Thank you very much for talking to us at Worldwide Wave.
No worries. Thank you so much for your time.
Just another message in too from 317, mentioning an insights program that recently explored gay men and their relationships with religion. How fascinating it was to go through that reconciliation between faith and sexuality. I was equally fascinated there by Elias's comments around culture, the taboo nature of homosexuality, and religion is just an excuse. That it's, well, whether it's Muslims or Christians, it's just an excuse. It's pretty straight down the gun barrel, that one.
It was, and I think it's really looking at the patriarchal system rather than the religion, and is it an excuse to carry on this system.
So how do you break that down? How do you...
Well, yes, I mean, it's something that would have, would have loved to ask him, but it's a really big question. Do you? I mean, I think.
And look, there were a number of questions when you spoke to him. They were big questions that he just said, "Look, it's kind of like I'm doing my best. I'm doing what I can, but that's such a big question." And when you throw in not just your own coming out or realization with all the, the powder keg that is Middle Eastern politics and views and culture and religion and all the...
I mean, when you talk to people about Palestine, they are really, really strong opinions already. So, if you've also got... So you're Palestinian, you're Lebanese, living in Australia with a lot of discrimination, you come out as a gay man, I think it's a lot of things to handle, and then try to break down barriers and stuff.
Does it come back to visibility, though? I mean, the fact that he has told his story, he's been very upfront, and, that's a part of his journey. And, I've just come back from Mardi Gras, where everybody is, where there are enormous cultures and everybody's got their own personal story. So you need somebody to stick their neck out to say, no, I'm going to, this yeah. is me. And then gradually, you know, the family or the others around.
And I think this book does a little bit of that because there's 22 Arab nationalities represented in that in the book we talked about. So I think there's really an enormous variety of cultural backgrounds and loads of insights on how this culture. So it's not about just about being gay. It's about, you know, just the.
The many different facets of identity within
that make our Australian community.
And so give us the name of that book there again.
It's called Arab Australian Others, Stories on Race and Identities.
Excellent. From your favourite bookstore, it's World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Dr. Joseph Goh from Monash University, Malaysia, on the World Wide Wave.
317 has reminded us about some intersectionality. Dean Smith, who is a senator in the Australian Parliament, who is a gay Christian and a monarchist. Well, it'd be a bit of everything, I guess.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
A big thank you to our guest tonight, Elias Jashan. His story is Coming Out Palestinian. It's a chapter in the new book titled Arab Australian Other, Stories on Race and Identity, available from your favourite bookstore. To everybody on Facebook who's interacted with us.
Yeah, Sadie, Gabe, William, Malika and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook this past week. That's W3 Joy on Facebook.
All the SMS and emails we got from 417... 317
and Akshay.
Thank you very much. Also, behind the scenes, our podcaster Peter and social media master Dean.
We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.